Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Middle Earth Mixer. First podcast of 2024, folks. Welcome back. Thank you for listening. It's been a minute. I've been very busy, but also this has been kind of a difficult one for me. Children of Horin, I hate and love this story, and this was a difficult podcast to do because I really struggle with this one. I think that this story is very easy to get wrong. I think that this story is very misunderstood, and I'm pretty confident that I have a good read on the whole story from Tolkien's perspective. However, with a lot of things with Tolkien, sometimes he left things a little vague. Sometimes he left things for the reader to kind of wrestle with. So, you know, that's a frustration. That's part of this story. But I'm going to give it to you from my perspective and how I see it and how I think, you know, what was the message that Tolkien really was trying to convey with the Children of Horin. I think that this is a really important story, particularly from a historical perspective, from a perspective of trying to understand Tolkien. And I think that really, at the end of the day, this story is about what controls fate. How is fate decided? And is fate governed by personal accountability for one's actions? Or is fate governed by outside forces that are impressed upon the individual? You know, a lot of the old northern stories that were told among the cultures of northern European nations. You know, we're talking about Scandinavian lore, Anglo-Saxons. A lot of these stories were sort of governed by fate, or a term that the Anglo-Saxons used. It was word, spelled W-Y-R-D. And it's very much this idea that you cannot escape the threads of fate. You know, correct me if I'm wrong on this. I haven't brushed up on Nordic, you know, the Nordic pantheon stories in a while, but I believe that there is three spinners from some Viking teleology that are essentially exist within or under the earth, and they are these women that weave the fates of individuals or man in the realm of Midgard. Could be wrong on that. You can correct me there. But, you know, that's a perfect example of that kind of mindset of, like, you cannot escape fate because there are forces that are deciding your fate as an individual for you. It was very much a part, you know, something that was ingratiated in the pagan Viking culture, particularly also a lot of the northern Germanic tribes kind of subscribe to that idea that they were individuals at the mercy of their deities. A great example of this is if you ever watch the show The Last Kingdom. The main character, he has that one phrase that he always says at the beginning of the show: "Destiny is all." That's very much the idea of, like, you cannot escape your destiny, and no amount of personal accountability or good actions on your part will allow you to avoid your ultimate doom. Now, that is something that is an element of the Children of Horin's story. And I believe that the Children of Horin is a clash. It is a philosophical debate standing at the intersection of this kind of the old stories of the northern spirit, the northern Germanic stories of fate being impressed upon you, clashing with the ideas of Christian accountability. And through good decision making in your life, you can create a better outcome for you that has, you know, obviously with the Christian worldview, there are no pagan deities impressing fates and dooms upon you. There is God, and God has a will for your life. And, you know, I think a lot of people have a bunch of different beliefs about how God's will plays out in our lives. I personally believe that God's will interacts with our own free will, and it ends up being kind of a dance. And that's how that plays out. But accountability plays into that. And the idea that you can, through accountable actions, kind of govern your doom, ultimately, is a very Christian one. This personal accountability, and it clashes with the traditional pagan idea that their lives are already decided for them, whether via benevolence or malevolence of these deities. And I believe that Tolkien wrote this as a debate To me, I look at the Children of Horin and I see every page as a debate between, are these things that are happening the main character's fault? Or are these things that are happening because the main character cannot escape them whether he likes it or not? So this is something that I really want to dig into as I go through the story here of the Children of Horin. I'm going to start at the beginning. I'm going to touch at all of the major points of this story. You might hear me say a lot of things throughout this podcast like, and then, you know, I'll probably say and then over and over again. And that's because I'm going in with the intention of trying to clean this podcast up a little bit because I had written so much. And as I was going back over my outline, I realized that maybe I'm including a lot of information that I shouldn't, and I should really just be sticking to most of the main points because I don't want this to be too long and too boring. You know, I don't want to weigh people down with the weeds. So I'm going to try and navigate this from the beginning while hitting the main points and focuses that I want to focus on. And I really hope that you enjoy this because, again, I think that the Children of Horin is a seriously underrated part of the Middle Earth story. I think that people underestimate, you know, how this fits into everything else. So with all that said, without further ado, let's jump right into it. All right, so the story is called The Children of Horin, right? Let's get into who Horin is real quick. Horin is the Lord of Dor Lomond. He is the grandson of Hador Goldenhead, who is the founder of the House of Hador. Now, the House of Hador was given lordship of a region called Dor Lomond, which existed within Fingolfin's kingdom. Now, Fingolfin, if you remember, he was the High King of the Noldor. He was the younger brother of Feanor, and he inherited the kingship when Maethros, who was Feanor's son, had actually given up the title. So the men, the three houses of the Edain, had crossed over the mountains into Beleriand, and one of the groups, the House of Hador, was given this land by Fingolfin in exchange to basically serve him as lord and to fight for him when called upon. Now, Horin, as Lord of Dor Lomond, is married to a woman named Morwen, who is a member of the House of Beor. So she's related to Beren, actually. She is kin to Beren of the story of Beren and Lúthien, Aragorn's ancestors. So it's interesting. I just love how all of the characters in all these stories are all tied together. So these are two members of two great houses that are joined, and they have a son named Torin. So that's where our main character comes in. This child, Torin, he is the prince of Dor Lomond. And they have a daughter named Erwin. She dies of a plague that is sent out by Morgoth. This plague comes from Angband. It spreads out across the land and seriously damages the population of people, you know, a lot of the men in the north. And what ends up taking place is Horin, the Lord of Dor Lomond, is called to war. He is called to war because he is a fief to the High King Fingon at this time, along with his brother Hor. So Horin and Horin of the Children of Horin, he is called to war by King Fingon at this time because this is now after the battle where Fingolfin, who had originally given the land to his ancestors, Fingolfin is dead at this point and Fingon has become the High King. And they are called to another war. And this is a war that takes place. It's started by the union of Maethros, one of Feanor's sons. He decides to bring all of the armies of the north together to try and siege Angband again. And this battle is a disaster. It is referred to as the Battle of Unnumbered Tears, which is an interesting name because if you recall back to the Doom of Mandos that was laid upon the Noldor when they were exiled from Valinor, this doom had mentioned tears unnumbered ye shall shed. And this was laid down as a curse upon the Noldor. So this, the Battle of Unnumbered Tears takes place. What happens is the elves line up, they go to attack, they are winning this battle, and then all of a sudden Morgoth kind of outsmarts them. The Easterling allies who had pledged fealty to Mithros betray Mithros, and they turn against him, and those were men of the East who Morgoth had promised lands to. So they flip sides, and Horin ends up making a last stand in defense so that King Turgon of Gondolin can retreat. And it's this really epic reading from the book. I highly recommend, if you have not heard the audiobook version of Christopher Lee reading this, it is brilliant. You can find it on YouTube. Just look up Christopher Lee reading Horin's Last Stand. Basically what happens is, and to provide context for this, Horin is, he already knows King Turgon of Gondolin, and King Turgon is, he's one of the kings of the elves. He's not the High King, because Fingon is the High King at this point. Fingon actually falls in battle fighting Gothmog, one of Morgoth's lieutenants. But Turgon and Horin are friends because Horin had actually been to Gondolin, the hidden city, which Turgon is king of. And Turgon is trying to retreat so he can save himself. And Horin offers to sacrifice himself along with his brother Hor. So they make this last stand trying to defend the king as he retreats. And what happens is Hor is killed. Horin is down to the last man by himself. All of his guards are slain. He slays an orc chieftain, and then he picks up the orc chieftain's axe, and he slays about 100 orcs, as well as the troll guard of Gothmog, who is, as I mentioned, a lieutenant of Morgoth and one of the Balrogs. And he is just slaying all of these enemies that are coming at him, and it's creating a pile of bodies to the point where Horin is buried in these bodies as he's swinging this axe around. And he slays so many that the axe is actually whittled down to pretty much nothing, and then it breaks. And as he's slaying, he is yelling, and I forget what the how to say it in Sindarin, but he's yelling out, "Day shall come again." And finally, the orcs are able to hold this brave man down. And Horin, he's known as the greatest warrior of men at this time. And they finally, you know, get him down. A bunch of orcs are able to restrain him. And Gothmog has him bound instead of killing him himself, because Gothmog wants to bring this man who had the absolute audacity to make this terrific stand, this brave stand. He wants to humiliate him. He doesn't want to give him death right now. He'd rather bring him back in chains to Morgoth. Gothmog has him bound and dragged before Morgoth. Now imagine this here. This is a Balrog. You know, imagine a Balrog that is taking the time to bound a man and drag him back to Morgoth. That's how much trouble Horin caused in this moment. And they were very upset because Turgon got away. You know, one of the main things that Morgoth is trying to do at this point is find the city, the hidden city of Gondolin. So he was very upset that Turgon was able to escape during this battle. So Gothmog takes Horin before Morgoth. So you have Morgoth, who is essentially at this point the most powerful creature under the sun, staring at this. You know, he's a powerful warrior, but Horin is still essentially an ordinary man. So this is a really powerful moment here. Let's just talk about Morgoth's motives for a second here. He brings this warrior before him because he wants to punish and he wants to break this warrior's spirit. He doesn't like that this small man has challenged him. And another thing to keep in mind, too, he hates the children of Iluvatar. Morgoth has nothing but resentment towards the beautiful creations of Iluvatar that he was not able to equally replicate himself. Think about orcs. Orcs, trolls, they're mockeries of the beautiful things that Eru has created. So that's one factor to consider. And also, he, like I said before, he really just wants to know the location of Gondolin. So he's thinking that maybe he can get the information of where Gondolin is from this character, because he knows, oh, Horin went through all this trouble so King Turgon of Gondolin could escape. Maybe he knows the location of the city. So Morgoth creates a pile of all of the bodies of the slain elves, and he sits Horin on top of this pile. Now, I'm going to do a lot of reading from this exchange, so bear with me here, because this, to me, is not only the most important exchange of this story, but it's one of the most important exchanges that exists in the Legendarium, because it is the only example that we have of a man having a conversation with Morgoth. And it gives us a glimpse sort of into Morgoth's mind and into not only his mind, but man's bravery in the face of evil. Man's bravery in sticking with his convictions in the face of evil, in the face of being destroyed, essentially, in the face of losing everything. And it also gives us a glimpse of the limits of evil as well. And speaking and keeping faith and taking authority over powers that would come against you as a man. So I'm gonna read here. Morgoth takes him up onto this pile of bodies, and it's as tall as a mountain because so many are dead. Again, this is the Battle of Unnumbered Tears. And Morgoth demands the location of Gondolin. And it says that Horin actually laughs in his face. So think of the bravery that it takes for a man to laugh in the face of Morgoth, this insurmountable, or at least a being that would appear insurmountably powerful to just a man. And he says, "Blind you are, Morgoth Bauglir." Bauglir was like a derogatory name that the elves had given to Morgoth. "And blind shall ever be, seeing only the dark. You know not what rules the hearts of men, and if you knew, you could not give it. But a fool is he who accepts what Morgoth offers. You will take first the price and then withhold the promise, and I should get only death if I told you what you ask." And then it says that Morgoth laughed at him and says, "Death you may yet crave of me as a boon." A boon is like a gift, as a gift or as a mercy. And then it says that Morgoth outstretches his arm towards Dor Lomond, towards Horin's realm that he rules as a lord. And it says that Morgoth curses Horin and his family. And he says, "Behold," talking about Horin's family, "behold, the shadow of my thought shall lie upon them wherever they go, and my hate shall pursue them to the ends of the world." And then Horin responds with, "You speak in vain, for you cannot see them, nor govern them from afar, not while you keep this shape and desire still to be a king visible on earth." Now stop right there. I want to analyze that quote for a second. So this is really interesting. We catch a glimpse into the limits of the power of Morgoth at this point. Morgoth is so, he has so much vanity and so much of a desire to rule over Arda, over the creation of Ilúvatar. He has so much jealousy of Manwë, the chosen lord over the earth that Ilúvatar has picked over him, who he sees himself as better than and more powerful. And at the beginning, he was more powerful than Manwë, essentially his sibling, but not, you know, not biologically, his Valar sibling. And Morgoth's power is restricted because so much power has exited him in his efforts to try and control and take over and dominate the living things of the world. Now it says, "While you keep this shape and desire still to be a king visible on earth." So even this path that Morgoth has chosen to be a dark lord visible on earth, even that very choice, which is outside of his purpose, living outside of his purpose actually drains power out of him and limits his power in comparison to the rest of the Valar who are living their purposes. So interesting point there. And it's also interesting that Horin took so much care to understand the lore of the Noldor and their knowledge of Morgoth. really shows the type of person that he is. And then Morgoth responds to him in this exchange by saying, "Fool, little among men, and they are the least of all that speak." So he's insulting the second children of Iluvatar at this point. Like, he basically sees men as nothing in comparison to the elves, who he also hates and can't stand, but he sees men as even less than elves. He says, "Have you seen the Valar, or measured the power of Manwë and Varda?" Again, so those are his Valar siblings, essentially. "Do you know the reach of their thought? Or do you think perhaps that their thought is upon you, and that they may shield you from afar?" So he's taunting him at this point, like, "Hey, do you seriously think that these other Valar think about you at all whatsoever? Your desire to maintain your integrity and your goodness and your faith to them is basically worthless." You know, he's trying to, doing what the enemy does often to us in real life, tries to get us to doubt. And then Horin responds, "I know not." So he's like, "I don't know what the Valar think of me right now." And then he says, "Yet so it might be if they willed. For the Elder King shall not be dethroned while Arda endures. Now Manwë is the Elder King. Iluvatar made Manwë the Elder King and governor of Arda, acting on his authority. And this is something that Morgoth hates." And then Morgoth says, "You say it. I am the Elder King. Melkor, first and mightiest of all the Valar, who was before the world and made it. The shadow of my purpose lies upon Arda." Arda's the earth. "And all that is in it bends slowly and surely to my will. But upon all whom you love, my thought shall weigh as a cloud of doom. And it shall bring them down into darkness and despair. Wherever they go, evil shall arise. Whenever they speak, their words shall bring ill counsel. Whatsoever they do shall turn against them. They shall die without hope, cursing both life and death." And Horin answers this with, "Do you forget to whom you speak? Such things you spoke long ago to our fathers, but we escaped from your shadow. And now we have knowledge of you. For we have looked on the faces that have seen the light, and heard the voices that have spoken with Manwë. Before Arda you were, but others also, and you did not make it. Neither are you the most mighty, for you have spent your strength upon yourself, and wasted it in your own emptiness. No more are you now than an escaped thrall of the Valar." And this is the kicker right here. And he says, "And their chain still awaits you." So, I mean, I love this exchange because you have Morgoth who's trying to get into his head right now. Morgoth is trying to make him hopeless. Morgoth is trying to break his spirit. And, you know, he says, "I'm the one who made Arda. My will weighs upon everything that happens on this earth, and there's nothing that you can do to escape it." And Horin, steadfast in his beliefs, speaks wisdom back to him. And again, he repeats this theme that actually, because of your own vanity and because of your own emptiness and the fact that you're living outside of the will of Iluvatar, you actually don't have all this power that you say you have. And then Morgoth responds with, "You have learned the lessons of your masters by rote." He's basically talking, he's trying to get Horin to believe that he is subscribing to lies at this point. He says, "You have learned the lessons of your masters by rote," basically saying, like, yeah, you believe the lies of the elves that tell you such things. And then he says, "But such childish lore will not help you now they are all fled away, because he has just won the battle of unnumbered tears, and the elves have all retreated, and Horin is here sitting on this pile of dead bodies at the mercy of Morgoth." And then, I do want to make a point about the chain of the Valar. He says, no more are you now than an escaped thrall of the Valar, and their chain still awaits you. That's such a powerful line, because that's what ends up happening, right? When the armies of the West finally do come over, they defeat Morgoth and they put him in chains and they cast him into the void. So it's a great line, because ultimately it comes to fruition. Their chain does await him, and he is put into that chain and cast into the void. All right, now back to the exchange. So as I said, Morgoth says, but such childish lore will not help you. Now they are all fled away. And then Horin responds with this powerful quote that I love. And I think it's the most important quote in this entire exchange. And I've definitely tweeted it out a couple times. I love it. Horin says this, "This last then I will say to you, thrall Morgoth. And it comes not from the lore of the Eldar, but it is put into my heart in this hour." So, interesting. He actually responds to Morgoth's claim that you're just believing childish stories that are told to you by the elves. He says, not from the lore of the Eldar. And it says, he goes on to say, "You are not the lord of men, and shall not be, though all Arda and Menel fall in your domain. Beyond the circles of the world, you shall not pursue those who refuse you." Now, I love that line, because it's so true to real life. He says, beyond the circles of the world, you shall not pursue those who refuse you. So Horin is taking this stand in this moment. It doesn't matter what you do to me. It doesn't matter what you do to my family. It doesn't matter what you do to elves, men, or the whole earth. Even if it falls under your entire domain, you cannot pursue our souls outside of the circles of the world. You can break my body right now. You can destroy me. You can, you know, make me lose my mind. You can break my spirit here in the earth, but you can't pursue my spirit outside of the circles of the world. When my soul departs, you can't touch me. And this is a really powerful line. And Morgoth hears this and tries to again break Horin. He tries to lie and break his hope and his steadfastness in this moment. And Morgoth says, beyond the circles of the world, I will not pursue them. For beyond the circles of the world, there is nothing. But within them, they shall not escape me until they enter into nothing. So Morgoth tries to break Horin's hope, because Horin is taking the position, like I said, you can break me now, but my soul cannot be touched. And Morgoth tries to say, like, hey, there's nothing. There's nothing beyond this life. There's nothing beyond this world for you to hope for. And then Horin just responds with a statement. He says, you lie. So that kind of ends off that exchange there. And then they go on to say some other things, but I want to capture the power of that exchange there, because it's so true to what we struggle with as men on a daily basis. And when you read The Children of Horin, you need to look at this exchange as the event that governs the entire story of the book. This is very much in line with, you know, some of those old Northern European storytelling where there's some event in the beginning of the story that governs the rest of the story. You know, I think of, like, you know, Amleth, the vengeance of Amleth, the theft of his throne at the beginning of the story. It kind of governs the rest of the story. Or if you think of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, the entire story is governed by this event that happens at a dinner where Sir Gawain kind of agrees to this exchange, to this game, you know, to participate with the Green Knight. This is one of those events. You know, this is where Tolkien brings it in line with a lot of mythical storytelling that he's already familiar with. You know, you need to, this has to be the lens in which you read the rest of the story. So just wanted to say that, and then we'll jump back here. And then it says that Morgoth takes Horin, and he brings him back to Angband, because again, he had him sitting on this big giant pile of dead bodies. He brings him back to Angband, and he sets him upon a chair at the top of Thangorodrim. So Thangorodrim are kind of the volcanic mountain peaks of this subterranean fortress that Morgoth has. He sets him on a very high place and straps him by his power to this chair so Horin is unable to move. And then he says, "Sit now there and look out upon the lands where evil and despair shall come upon those whom you have delivered to me. For you have dared to mock me and have questioned the power of Melkor, master of the fates of Arda. Therefore, with my eyes you shall see, and with my ears you shall hear, and nothing shall be hidden from you." Now, I really want you to remember that Melkor here calls himself master of the fates of Arda, because this is key to the story. So he says that, and he gives Horin, his power comes out of him and onto Horin, and he gives Horin his sight. So he basically gives his mind and knowledge to Horin in this moment and imprisons him for him to know and see the things that Morgoth sees as they work in the world.
All right, now I've actually decided that I'm just going to stop right there. I want you to chew on that conversation a little bit. I was going to do it all in one episode, but I actually think that this is a good place to stop. And then in the next episode, we can jump into Torin's actual life. So chew on this conversation, and let it be the filter in which you listen to the next episode. And yeah, thanks for listening.